the show that goes there. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Boy, do we have a lot to cover today in our news in review, including stuff like taxes, subpoenas, contempt, murder, sex cult leaders. Yeah, it has been what we would like to say very, very fruitiously has been a hell of a week. Look, before we get to all of that, we got to do some brief introductions. I got to say hello as your host. My name is Shaggy Jenkins, critical thinker, problem solver guy that is running on fumes right now, and also who can be found at ShaggyJenkins.com or wherever fine social media is served at Shaggy Live. Joining me from the windy city of Chicago, which is probably one of the safest places in the United States mainland right now, and that is saying something. Please welcome, he is a radio legend, he is a commentator, he is a talk show host himself. It is Information Headquarters, Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. It's been a little bit. I haven't done this in a little bit, a couple of weeks. How you doing, Mike?
Man, I'm all right, but I'm just going to go ahead and say I miss you like it's been a month of Sundays, it feels like.
Well, I miss you more. I was saying before we started, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she was saying, you two need to get back, you know, and it's been a little bit. I said, yes, it has.
Yeah.
So nice to be reunited, yeah.
You know, and this is the thing, because I always look forward to the weekend review, because I know that we're going to mix it up and we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about. But this week, before I even planned my first show this week, the New York Times came out with this report of 10 years of Trump's taxes. And they basically said two things. And I want you to guess in a nutshell what those two things are tantamount, or should I say a paradox to. Those two things are: he lies and he's broke. Isn't that Trump's whole mystique, that he's rich and he never lies?
Well, yeah, it depends on your lens. I mean, I think some of us, you know, caught this guy from the beginning. When you watch him when he was presidential running for the presidency, Trump, a lot of people from New York were saying that, you know, this guy's a charlatan. He's bad news. He's not going to be good for New York, let alone the country. So you heard these New York people who know of his history say these warnings. And we all know what happened after that. We became president-elect and not President Trump. But they were giving the clarion call way before he got into office.
Can I tell you something really, really neat? This has to do with Trump's book, The Art of the Deal. Everybody remembers that, right?
Right.
Okay, so in that book, if you actually read it, which, please don't read it, but if you're somebody like us that has to read so that we can get on shows and talk about silly things, let's just go ahead and say that the guy that ghost wrote the book appeared yesterday on Anderson Cooper 360 and basically said, I want the book recataloged as fiction, or I want the book renamed and the title should be Donald Trump Sociopath.
Ooh.
Chris, that is a heavy thing to be levied on you by the guy that apparently wrote your quote unquote success story book.
You know, it's unraveling. And I really believe Trump knows this. So that's devastating, to say the very least, for the ghostwriter to appear on, you know, network cable to mention this. I mean, it's huge, and you cannot take it lightly. And when you get paid, of course, to do this, to be a ghostwriter, but to, you know what, maybe he had reservations back then of writing it and not really selling, you know, because not all money is good money. Not all check is a good check. So maybe down the road with this ghostwriter, maybe realize that, you know, maybe I could have helped, maybe I helped spearhead to where he is now, to help father the lies. So for him to go back and have it renamed, you cannot overlook that. It's not a joke. I mean, we have fun with it, obviously. But to sit back and say and use the word sociopath, on all the descriptions you could pick, you pick that, that's damning.
Yeah, and this is the thing about that kind of an allegation, because he said, look, at the time that I was writing the book, his name's Tony, by the way, said that when I was writing this book, Tony Schwartz, I did not know Donald Trump. I had no familiarity with this guy other than what his representatives told me. And so when I was sitting down and I was doing the work with him, I believed this whole mystique and took him at face value. Now, looking back on those events and the time that I have sat with him, interviewing him and talking to him, and with this New York Times report, I'm going to go ahead and say the man lies and behaves like a sociopath. And that is a heavy, heavy thing to think about when you look at what the New York Times actually found in those taxes.
When you're trying to, again, spin the narrative for Trump himself, I know he did the Adolf Hitler thing with the Twitter, saying it's fake news and the whole nine. We always know his spiel, how he operates. But again, even people, I think, who are traditional Republicans have to question this, have to look at what's there. Not all of them buy into the whole fake news mentality. Not all these things can be non-true. But again, when you have people who follow him blindly, no matter what he says and does, again, this article deals with the fact that he had tax figures that showed over $1 billion in business losses and $1.17 billion in losses from 1985 to 1994.
Yeah.
And then not paying taxes for 8 years out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I go ahead and bring up something about that? Because here's the thing. Donald Trump actually took to his own defense when it came to that. Now, oh, God, I love this response, because not only does it smack in the face of logic, but it also kind of, how do I say this? Kind of says, hi, what you've believed about me being dishonest is now officially true out of my mouth. Donald Trump says it was a game. We all if you're in real estate development, you overemphasized your losses. It was a sport. He called tax dodging, which, by the way, 8 years of those taxes that he didn't pay was because he was hundreds of millions of dollars in debt on paper. Donald Trump said that was, quote-unquote, sport. In other words, Chris, did the president just admit that he lies about finances to the United States government?
Of course he did. Of course he did. And what's sad is that you're going to have Republicans that go on this side and saying, well, if he said it was sport, it was sport. No, sport is baseball, basketball, football, soccer, lacrosse. You won't throw that in there as well. Those are sports. This is not sport. If that's your mentality of sports, then I would not want to be in the room back in the day when he was so-called doing business deals. Because, okay, you may get a thrill out of it. It may be exciting, but it sure as hell not a sport. Let me read this to you real quick, Shaggy. This was Trump's attorney, Charles Harder, issued the following statement to the New York Times. Quote, your statement regarding Trump's tax returns from 30 years ago are highly inaccurate and based upon information that is demonstrably false. Any story on this subject that is inaccurate and harms Trump's reputation would be defamatory and actual malice. You are on notice, unquote. The word that made me laugh was reputation.
Yeah.
What reputation? A reputation of a guy who, for years, for example, did not want to show his tax returns. All of the presidents up to him always showed their tax returns. Why? Because it shows a vulnerability, not a vulnerability. It shows the fact that, you know, they're honest with the American people. This is what they make. People who are, and so they won't be, for example, how can we say this? not conversed or not to be influenced by outside resources. Case in point, Russia. So if we go by what we have in the New York Times article about all these billions of dollars in debt, and here comes Mother Russia to say money laundering for me, to say that we'll give you money for A, B, and C. If you're losing money and have no money to deal with, and an outside resource comes along, let alone, you know, Mother Russia comes in and says this for you, what do you do if you're Donald Trump? You got to keep the brand going. You got to sell your name so you connect with Russia. It all ties in. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. Republicans, get a grip. Your man is a failure. And you can spend all you want to. You can't spend this. The man is detrimental to your party and to the nation.
Well, that's exactly where I think some Republicans are waking up this week, because in kind of the last 24 hours, here's something that's going to shock you. A congressional investigative body has subpoenaed Donald Trump Jr. Get this, it's not the House of Representatives, it's the Judiciary, Investigating Panel over on the Senate that's led by a Republican. They have now subpoenaed Donald Trump Jr. and said, you need to come back and answer questions about Russian collusion and what exactly happened around June 2016, because we're not exactly sure you gave us all the answer.
Right.
Now,
you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Donald Trump Jr., of course, has already taken the stance. Look, I gave you 25 hours before. This is a witch hunt. This is political deep-based controversy. The aliens are out to get me. I've got my tinfoil hat on. Where's my brother? I'm sorry, I kind of rambled there at the end, but you get what I mean. Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. are very similar when it comes to their reactions to all of this stuff. They are stonewall obstructionists, and it seems that Jr. is going to go with that strategy, doesn't it?
Well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. When your father is who he is and you work for him, he worked for his company. Same with Donald Trump and his father, Fred. You know, it's a traditional family thing. It's an inheritance, quote-unquote. I guess you have money to inherit, depending on who you are. And you're just involved in that. So when you're around your father, you take on the responsibilities or actions or a reaction like your dad does. So he definitely is Junior when it comes to this. In this situation, again, I said it before, the only way Trump is going to go down is that more Republicans get on board to have him removed. It's the only way. Why? Because they are in control right now of the House. So when you look at the hierarchy from the presidency to the House and Senate and things like that, it's the majority of the Republicans. So but you had to have other Republicans becoming more independent thinking and say, you know what, I'm not going to go along with party. I got to go along with what's right for this country. And once those numbers start to grow, you'll see more of a push when it comes to that.
Yeah, because look, when it comes to all of the various investigations, we knew this week was going to be hell on William Barr, the Attorney General of the United States. We knew that was going to happen. Last Thursday, he did not show up for a subpoenaed appearance in front of a congressional committee. Now, of course, we had a couple of laughs with the ceramic chicken and the cold bucket of KFC, but fact of the matter is that wasn't a chicken move. That was a stonewall move. And the Department of Justice, of course, called up Nadler and says, hey, let's negotiate. And they went through the accommodation part of this whole political process. And that's important should this go to a judicial proceeding later down the road. But this is the thing. The House investigation basically came out, or the House panel, under the charge of Nadler, had enough Republicans to come over to their side to actually hold the Attorney General in contempt yesterday in a vote. Chris, I know that contempt things are kind of, how do we say this? All done in a symbolic way, but this is some pretty heavy symbolism laid down by the House towards the DOJ, isn't it?
Well, of course it is. I mean, going back to the hierarchy of the presidency, the person who is in office it dictates the behavior pattern of his staff. So if we go by that theory, William Barr's no different, being the AG. He's no different. Why? Because he's dealing with the fact that he's covering for the president. That's his job. He goes in there, he thinks he's above the law, and that's his overall contempt that the Department of Justice cannot stand. It's the gravitas that he has back and forth with them in the investigation that we saw a few weeks ago. When we look at the fact that here's the man, again, you think that people who are in higher office in the government would be for the people. No, they are for themselves. They have their own constituencies to answer to. It's not about you, not about me or him or her or somebody there in the corner. It's not about us, it's about them. And it shows that when you watch the just disdain, it's like, for example, like when you watch, you know, the back and forth that he had, it's like we're wasting his time. It's like, how dare you talk to me? I got other things to do, like, you know, go scrub my back. You know, I don't have to be here. And that type of audacity that we've seen, not only with him, with the president, with Kellyanne Conway, with Sarah Sanders, with everybody, that snarkiness that's there, nobody is gravitating towards that. They don't want that in their elected officials. We don't have to have that. So when we look at Barr, Barr is in the chain of command where, even though he's so-called testimony or testifying, we're feeling like we're wasting his time.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't know, as far as a country, how much time we are allowing to be wasted on this back and forth and what it's going to do to impact us. Because here's one of the crazy things that I thought of today. I know for a fact that most of the time when it comes to feuding branches within federal government, those complaints, to go from a complaint to an actual lawsuit, you know, to an actual trial, I think that Republicans right now are doing all of this risky behavior because they know that if Democrats force this into a judicial proceeding, that proceeding probably won't kick off until after the next election cycle in 2020. You think there's any logic to that?
It is. They're on a rush timetable, and they have to get themselves together because, once again, when I said earlier in the conversation, Shaggy, about Republicans, for example, calling Don Jr. back for more questioning, is there going to be an alliance when it comes to 2020? Do they go with Trump, or do they might want to bail with Trump and go with somebody else to back them to go for the presidency? We don't know yet. We are in dire straits. We're living in strange days. I think the party will have no other choice but to back Trump, but it's just so many questions that the president has before he was elected and during his time as president. So it's going to be conflicting trains of thought. Again, in the Republican Party, you have traditional GOP and Trumpsters, and that's where the infighting is. So regardless of what you said about Republicans over the years, they have some sort of integrity, if you want to call it that. See, here's the thing about Trump real quick. When you use code language over the years, Trump was the one who just went over the line. Now, you and I both come from radio. I come from talk radio, as you know. The birth of a Rush Limbaugh happened in the 90s, for example, the late 90s, you know, during that time, early 90s. And when Trump, before Trump, you had, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Rush would use code words like you people and urban areas and things like that. So he's talking about, you know, those people, meaning anybody of color, and also using urban for people of color in different neighborhoods. So here comes Trump. He just crossed the line and said S-holes when it comes to foreign countries with people of color in it. So they have been at the line for years. He just crossed the line altogether. And that's what happens with rhetoric and tone and the power of spoken word. And we fast forward to where we are now. People understand the following. You cannot ignore the obvious, like that commercial with Captain Obvious. You could be a captain, admiral, private. It's obvious something's wrong with the country. Again, I reiterate, if you are for Trump and don't question Trump, then I question that person who supports Trump.
Yeah, me too, because this is the thing. Even the Republicans now are starting to question. Think about that. We have a Republican Committee on the Senate subpoenaing, for the first time ever, one of Trump's children.
Yes.
That is way over Trump's established red line. On the other side, we've got the House of Representatives that's holding the Attorney General in contempt and has also went ahead and, despite what the president did with this whole thing with executive privilege, they went ahead and issued a subpoena yesterday for the unredacted Mueller report, as well as all background information. Now, this is something that I thought was so weird. For the first time ever, I am going to mention a name that has been anti everything that we've talked about, but is now on this bandwagon, because it's not just Nadler over at the House of Representatives that has issued this subpoena for the full report and all of the underlying documentation. Over on the Senate, Devin Nunes has started his own proceedings towards the exact same goal. I mean, I don't want to sound like Doctor Strange here, but dude, are we in the end game now?
We should be approaching the end game, because as a nation, as a government, we cannot have this type of behavior from the president. And again, it goes back to this core theme of Republicans seeing that, questioning the behavior of the president and making due justice about what can happen. Those are great moves to have for the betterment of the citizens of this country. For example, here's what I got for the executive privilege, what the meaning is. The constitutional principle that permits the president and high-level executive branch of officers to withhold information from Congress, the court, and ultimately the public. Now, here are two points about executive privilege that could be used. One, for certain national security needs, and two, to protect the privacy of White House deliberations when it is in the public interest to do so. We have seen this president now not only put it into full swing, executive privilege, but it's abusing the power. Again, we don't want to see a redacted Mueller report. We want to see an unredacted Mueller report. We want to see it pure in its finest form. If you have nothing to hide, then why have it redacted? And why invoke the executive privilege? Because you have something to hide, obviously.
Yeah. Now, I've got to talk about executive privilege here, because this is where it gets kind of cloudy. Okay, so Donald Trump has basically went ahead and said, I am going to claim executive privilege over the entire Mueller report. Now, from a legal definition, this is clearly, from the outside looking in, obstructionist type of behavior. And I think we can all agree, this looks like obstruction. Walks like obstruction, talks like obstruction.
Right.
But that's something else, too. Is it obstruction if there is no legal basis for him to have executive privilege? Because executive privilege, Chris, is actually more like a razor blade, a scalpel, than it is a gunshot. You don't just kill something dead like you do with a gun. Executive privilege is meant to be surgical, only allowing for tiny or in part things to be claimed executive privilege. Nobody has ever attempted to claim executive privilege over an entire process, because, legally speaking, that's not how it works. The executive branch has to identify a specific clause, a specific piece of content to call executive privilege on, and has to provide a reason and underlying materials that support justification of that reason to claim executive privilege. It's not just, I am an executive, I call privilege, like Trump thinks, is it?
No, it's not. And to be completely transparent with the government, the president's going back to modern-day presidents of Herbert Walker Bush, and we've had Clinton and George W. and also Obama, up to where we are with Trump. Each one of those presidents had and did execute executive privilege. They've all done it in some way, shape, or form, but not to this capacity, not to the point of where we're looking at not only one component or two components, multi-components of this president being connected to something nefarious. And that's the only reason why it takes the skill or quote-unquote skill that he thinks he has to just throw it out there. Because all he's doing is trying to live on borrowed time. He knows his time is coming up. And anything to deflect it, to give it the Heisman Trophy stiff arm, or to deflect it, or to get it away from him. Because as you know, the first thing he does is deflect. Oh, I don't know about that, or I don't recall that, never happened. Like, for example, WikiLeaks that came out a few weeks ago. That whole thing, I don't know about WikiLeaks, I don't know anything about it. And got the man on tape. I love WikiLeaks. This is when he was running for the presidency. And you know, come on, man. The man is suffering from some sort of dementia. Some sort of, because how can you sit there and say that on record, I don't recall WikiLeaks, and got just saying it, 9,000 times on record. So we're not dealing with a person with all his faculties. If the government really want to get him out of there, indictments happen all the time. And when you look at it from the standpoint of where he is right now,
mm-hmm. You know, maybe 20. We got to take a quick break because we're right up against it. And when we get back, we'll pick right back up with executive privilege and more, because this week, holy cow, it's the Week in Review, the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
Is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. Boy, do we have a lot to cover, and we've already covered a whole lot. And if you missed it, shame on you. You should probably jump on our website, shaggyjenkins.com, and find out more there. Joining me from the Windy City of Chicago is broadcasting legend. I can call you that now. You do a show with Dr. Ron. You're all over the interwebs and the AM and FM band. So, information headquarters, take it away, Chris Bass.
Thank you very much. Always glad to be with you, man. Always glad to chop it up with the topics and week in review, and you make it do what it do. Hey, that rhymed. I didn't know that. That's all right there.
Yeah, cool. We can Dougie Fresh this stuff now.
That's right.
So, Mr. Bay, 6 minutes we're on. Let's see. We spent our last 6 minutes talking about executive privilege, and I had to interrupt you right in the middle of it, where we got to the part where it was talking about executive privilege doesn't work as a blanket insurance policy. The problem is that that's exactly what Trump is trying to claim, isn't it?
Well, exactly. You know, when you abuse power, the people who put you in power either are for it or against it. And again, you know, when you're using this time to make sure that nothing gets out because you're afraid of certain information, that details to you will be exposed, that you'll be exposed as a charlatan that you are and the liar that you are. And you think that most liars who lie believe they're the smartest person in the room, because they believe that their lies, and people buy into those lies and believe it for it to be self-value. But he doesn't realize that people are onto you. You're not as smart as you think you are. It's like the classic Emperor Wears New Clothes. You know, you're the clothing you have on that you think is brand new and it's invisible silk, and it's not. Everybody sees you warts and all, which is a hell of a sight to see, but people see you for who you are and what you are. And for him to know that when you have investigations, you have ongoing stories in the news about whether it's, you know, Robert Mueller or whether it's, you know, other people involved over time, not everybody could be wrong. Not everybody can come after you and say, well, the reason why I disassociated with Donald Trump because of A, B, and C is a plethora of people. I mean, take your pick all these times. So all these people were wrong, all the fake news. No, I don't think so, no.
No, because it's going to be a very hard time claiming fake news on this whole executive privilege thing, because it's playing out now in two different sides of Congress. Now, the problem is that, and I'm just going to throw this out here for optics, okay? Let's not talk legalities. Let's not talk so much as procedural thing. Instead, let's talk about reputation and appearance. If you are a guy that has done nothing wrong, why would you engage in the exact same act you are accused of doing in the initial report to stop the report from going public? In other words, why would you obstruct after being accused of obstruction? What does that look like to the average person?
But to the person who's doing in this situation with Trump, we're not supposed to be that smart. We're not supposed to be that bright to realize what he's doing. And you and I and other people know what he's doing. It's outing yourself. And it's also showing the fact that you don't even care about your reputation. You're putting yourself out there on Front Street when you're denying. And once again, it's his story. He'll stick to it. And he's going to keep on doing so. But again, when all these people are coming forward, let's just stick with the Mueller report. Again, the basic, if you have nothing to hide, then there is no redaction. But the fact is, redaction brings up questions. And the questions are coming forward to you, but you don't want any questions. You want to evade and duck and dodge and make sure nobody knows. No, we're on to you. And the fact that you keep on doing this behavior pattern, people are creatures of habit anyway. And people repeat what they do. So he's no stranger to it. He's just repeating what he knows, to duck and dodge and have people come forward to protect him, which is going to protect himself.
And when it comes to protecting Trump's self and Trump's inner circle, going after the Mueller report in an obstructionist kind of way, will it work? That's the real question. At the end of the day, will this work?
No, I don't think it will work at all. And what we're looking at, again, is a colossal waste of time, because he knows that when you're involved in something as high profile as this, you're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy. This is not Kansas. This is the world stage. This is the United States of America. You cannot get away what you got away with all those years in New York, but you didn't, because the New York Times says all those billions and billions of dollars you wasted in business losses. So you don't have anybody to hide behind. You don't have any people come out and a fixer like Michael Cohen. You don't have it anymore. It's just you. So what do? You abuse your power in office.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Abuse of power has been very much a central theme of this week's news. And I want to shift away from D.C. real quick, because here's a story that we've talked about in the past. We've scrutinized, we've analyzed, and basically came to the same conclusion. Something is very fishy with this story at the absolute least. But it's back in the news. This week, the family of Sandra Bland, the young lady that was arrested under no pretenses and died under police custody in what they called an apparent suicide, video footage came out that she captured herself during the course of the arrest. And would it surprise you, after seeing the video yourself, Chris, does it surprise you at all at how hard authorities fought to keep that video from going public?
They've been protecting each other for years when it comes to certain authorities. And Sandra Bland, just like other people of African-American descent, have been desecrated, killed, beaten up, put in hospitals for a long time, for, dare I say, centuries. And so when we look at this story, the 39-second cell phone video that Sandra Bland had is very detrimental to the police department there and other people involved, because something's going to have to be. I understand being a police officer is the most stressful when you're doing that job and being a first responder or firefighters. It should not be disrespected, But unfortunately, you have people who, like you said before in another conversation with Trump, with them too, abuse their power. So, for example, we pull somebody over, myself included. If I was to be pulled over, I would get nervous. Why? Because I might get shot and killed. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And the person shouldn't live that like that. You shouldn't be in fear. Well, today's technology, you can record and know your rights as a citizen to record what's going to happen because they're a public figure. They work for, you know, the public, obviously. You pay their salary through your taxes. So you have the right to record a certain event or events, period. Like, for example, if you see someone on the street that you think is being abused by an officer, as long as you remain a certain amount of feet from the activity, you still record them. And so, you know, still go to the precinct and report to put them on notice. In this situation, the officer just reacted as though she was strapping with two guns, you know, with smoking barrels on her. And she was being polite and being respectful, but the officer wasn't. And so when the officer goes to make the report, it's flipped. She was the one that was belligerent. She was the one disrespectful. So I had to act accordingly. And again, once officers go to the go-to line, I fear for my life. That must be in the playbook because of every police situation I read about when a person is involved who got beat up or, dare I say, killed, that's usually in the state of the statement that they put in, I fear for my life. And so when you go to these go-to lines that certain authorities use, it's sad. And so hopefully, for example, let me say this real quick. When I saw the footage, the person showed the relatives of Sandra Bland the footage of the 39-second video, and one woman said, equivocally, while I was even making a stutter, we had to reopen the case. Just that simple. And so now the family's involved to reopen these wounds of their loved one. But if justice needs to be served, got to fight it head on. Hopefully this videotape would do that.
Now, this is the thing, because the Sandra Bland case started strange. It had all kinds of strangeness in it as it was developing and has never ceased to be strange. And one of the most serious things that is kind of brought up was how violent was this officer with her? And up until the video came out, that's always been kind of one of those nagging questions of how volatile was this confrontation? Because let us not forget, me and you, a long time ago, had to have a discussion about whether or not Sandra Bland's mugshots were taken of an actual living person. And one of the charges that has been levied against this department is that she had already succumbed to her wounds and died by the time they threw her in the orange jumpsuit and took her mugshot. And when you look at the video, that scenario starts to look a lot more plausible than it did before, doesn't it?
It does. When you look at the escalation of the officer, for example, you know, the shouting and the commands and things like that, it's beyond sad because you have people who respect the law, I believe Sandra Bland did, and was trying to act accordingly, but the officer was the one that was fired up. Fastilio, you know, when we saw that video of Costello, you know, when that young man was going for his gun, and the officers, you know, shot him, and the lady was like, you know, I don't know how she was calm in that situation. He was licensed to carry. He's trying to show his information, and then the officer, you know, let into him. And so there has to be a stigma when it comes to certain people of color behind the wheel of automobile that get a hard time. Even if it's no more than being pulled over, as they say, driving while black. It doesn't matter what you do, you pull over anyway. These scenarios have to change, but it has to change with the fact that they have to admit that there's a problem. The police authorities have to admit there's a problem. The fraternity or the police have to admit there's a problem because it never gets solved. It never gets taken care of. It's pushed under the, you know, swept under the rug. Police officers are taken off of duty, put on desk duty or paid leave, whatever, and they're still being taken care of. Probably moved to another precinct somewhere else in the city or somewhere in a neighboring city, and they continue on with their lives or have a big hefty pension. So it doesn't get solved. It just becomes an ongoing problem, and unfortunately it is.
Now, I mean, gypsy cops and the phenomenon of them aside, we do kind of have to carefully consider the Sandra Bland case when we juxtaposition against all the other police brutality cases that were coming out and still at top-of-mind awareness of most Americans around the time. I mean, we had just gotten over, or should I say not even gotten over, but gotten to the point where we could start civilly discussing the Michael Brown case. Everybody remembers Michael Brown was apprehended for being black outside. Didn't have a car. He was just existing. So that one was straight ahead. We had a lot of footage of it and everything. Once again, when Philando Castile, that footage came out of him getting pulled over by cops and then being shot up as he tried to identify himself as a card-carrying concealed carry permit holder, and he was going for a permit and a wallet to show ID as requested by law enforcement officers, and they filled him full of lead. That case was very, very new, and then Sandra Bland comes along, and things take a kind of a turn because this is a woman that, at least on the other side of the argument, people that do not support fairness and equality when it comes to how you're treated by authority basically came out and said, because Sarah Bland, unlike all these other cases that I've laid out before you, was a activist in her life, her case obviously is exactly according to the police reports. She's an activist. She's an angry black woman. She is an angry minority. He obviously has some pent-up tension against authorities. So when this all transpired, their narrative was angry black woman gets herself killed. Am I wrong?
No, you're definitely correct in your assessment. And again, you know, let's go back to 2015. The traffic stop happened there in Texas, and we saw the videotape. If you've seen it now, the controversial exchange he had with the officer. She was in jail for 3 days. Let's go back to that, 3 days straight, and then was found hanged in the cell and ruled a suicide. So when you look at the particulars of the case, you have to spin it to make sure it works for you. So with the authorities being there, again, look, if you know how to bring in people potentially who are dangerous and, you know, perps or whatever, you know how to, I hate to say it, but it's true, to spin the evidence to justify a shooting, it was a clean shot, did you fear for your life, like I said earlier, and things of that nature, you have to spin the narrative. And the narrative, like you said before, was about her being angry and black and an activist and all that type of thing. So on the onset, you kind of say, well, you know, because she was angry, maybe she was angry towards the officer at hand. So again, you got to look through that. If the officer was in wrong from the beginning, and we see all these things play out, you got to make the narrative work for the police officers and department to make them look good and for them to so-called rule a suicide, quote unquote, that she did it in the cell. It makes her the fact that she was the one with the problems or issues, not the officer.
No, because I hate to say it, when you're talking about the inner culture of police, the dirty culture of police, you know what they call this? They call this a clean kill. That's the only thing that you can call it. Because at the end of the day, we have some very, very serious questions of what led to Sandra Bland's death. And this video coming out sheds new light that their account, the Texas account of what transpired, is factually incorrect.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you look at, you know, you mentioned about Michael Brown. Let's go to Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin was killed by a wannabe cop. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, really, you know, he didn't deserve it. None of them deserved it. You talk about the hands of the authorities and police. In Trayvon Martin's situation, a person who failed becoming a cop and felt that he was justified in doing what he did before he called the authorities. So where does that come from? Where does the mentality come from? You cannot walk the earth thinking that you had no problem taking out somebody else's life and not suffer for it. But when you're able to do that and you go to court and you just, you know, slap on the wrist for killing somebody, you know, as a teenager, then you do have that mentality that you are literally above the law.
Yeah, because look, cops are one thing. And I mean, we can talk about time after time after time in the United States, in recent news, state by state, how cops have overstepped their bounds with minorities. But the thing is that there's the other side of cops. Cops that are, let's say, still traumatized after a mass shooting. Now, just a couple weeks ago, I don't even want to say celebrated. We honored the anniversary of the first mass shooting in schools in the United States. That, of course, is the infamous assault at Columbine High School. Mm-hmm. Almost 20 years to the date, some 7 miles around the bend in Colorado, we have the Highland Ranch STEM High School that had this week two assailants, one an adult male and two a juvenile, both of them alumni of the school, penetrate deep into the school, much eerily like Columbine was in the original days with Dylan and Eric. But this one really stung because, Chris, we've had 20 years and it's only 7 miles away in Colorado to learn a very vital lesson. And you would think that when Columbine happened back in 1999, by this time, we would have figured something out. We would have tried something. Why is it that a community like Highland Ranch is once again going through another tragedy where kids lost their lives?
Well, first let me say this. You know, I was at WLS Radio at the time here in Chicago. I remember we covered that story. And it was devastating because you don't think that your heart goes out for the families, obviously, and for children. And the fact that these children and people that were involved that were killed will never be able to live their lives, obviously. And you see the people crying outside the school. I'll never forget this one lady shout out. It's not supposed to happen here. I took it as a two-folded message. You can't escape evil. I'm not condoning what happened because that was violent. But just because you're in the suburbs or whatever you think that there isn't any type of quote-unquote urban activity, you can't escape evil. What happened with the trench coat mafia, quote-unquote, they got from the internet during that time and they wanted to go in there and send a message, whatever that message was a very violent message. If we fast forward 20 years to where we are with this, the school shooting that happened there at STEM School Highlands Ranch is America's 35th shooting since the fall. 35th. 35 situations of people being killed at a school. The government, I don't know, obviously, if they have a proponent or department to look at this specifically. They should. Now, I don't know if they do or not. They should take it a little more seriously. I'm not saying that they have not, because I'm going to prove that type of information, not privy to it. But if they have a department specifically when it comes to violence in schools from coast to coast, there has to be more that has to be done, obviously. There has to be a component across the board. Should we start having metal detectors? Should we have extra police, law enforcement at high schools and grammar schools? Maybe we should. We have to do something. Because the death toll is rising, and it seems as though it just keeps on getting higher and higher.
Well,
that's a sad commentary, the whole thing.
This is the thing, though, because I existed in a time before 1999, so did you. But my time was a little bit closer to Columbine. I graduated in 1995 than yours was. So this is one of the things that I kind of want to make abundantly clear for people that are always saying, not doing enough to secure school. during the time that I was going to school in the 1990s, 1993, 94, and 95, there was another school in our county that was supposedly the troubled school. And if you thought that that somehow tied to the fact that there was a majority of minorities in that school, then you are absolutely correct. So what did they do to those students versus the students in my sunny little Caucasian school? They put up fences, razor wire, metal detectors at every entrance, and not one, but three different resource offices, officers provided by the county of Gaston County, just to get through their Monday through Friday school week. Chris, those safeguards that everybody says will work, will stop violence, are effective, has been used to quote unquote deter violence forever, which it's never worked. And two, let's just be honest, the security concern of schools that would have to have these type of, you know, extra enhanced security methods would primarily end up being schools in minority communities. And at the end of the day, that doesn't do nothing, does it?
I think it's a catch-22. The thing about it is, for example, you don't want teachers to be armed, as Trump wanted to put into play. Do not do that. We don't need that. We need people to have skilled backgrounds in law enforcement and to do a more humane survey and sweep and be there as a conduit, because it's too much of people or young people bringing in guns and knives and mostly guns and doing violence among people that are there trying to get an education. You know, we've seen the footage of students screaming, "Oh my God," getting on Facebook, getting on Twitter, getting on Instagram. And we've seen the footage of students who you hear the gunshots in the background and they're fearing for their lives. That's fearing for your life right then and there. You don't know if you're going to walk out alive or not. Yeah. There has to be some sort of deterrent, because our children are dying. We do not need their blood in the classrooms. We need their minds in the classroom, not a splatter of blood because someone had a bad day or a girl turned them down for a date. Something has to happen. So if we go back and probably retool the opportunity for classmates and people to be safe there, let's do that. Let's come on, make America first. Let's put children first. How about kids first? How about that? Let's try that.
People, love you, kids. We got to go. That's the end of our show. Till next time, be safe.